The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Hey, happy Mother's Day to everybody. Hey, listen, I don't think you have to be a mother of two-legged human beings to be considered a mother.
Exactly.
Because most women are mothering someone. So happy Mother's Day to women everywhere. All women, what do you say?
There you go.
My wife would fall into that category. We have four-legged children.
I have four-legged children. And I have a husband that I mother. So I'm a mother.
That's a whole different
My wife would probably agree with that.
Welcome to We the People Radio. We are chatting and streaming live at wethepeopleradio.us. You're joining your hosts, Aaron Ryan, Elizabeth Woodward, and Bob Martin. And if you're tuning in for the first time, we cover all things under the umbrella of fiscal responsibility, limited government, and adherence to the Constitution. And you can give us a call at 530-605-4567.
Did you hear they mention the Tea Party on Fox News at the top of the hour?
No.
Something about the IRS.
Something about the IRS?
Yeah. Oh. Hey, big week in the news, huh?
There was a lot going on.
There was a lot.
It was kind of nice that we were sandwiched in with a whole lot of other stuff. You know, the whole IRS thing.
Yeah.
Because honestly,
we all knew that was going on.
Exactly. And I don't know how many people really, well, I don't think a lot of people knew about it, that a lot of groups applied for nonprofit status because we're going to educate the public and do all that kind of stuff. And at the end of the day, they just sort of didn't answer. It kind of went on full stall. And then they went on. Well,
then they started asking for things that were really unreasonable.
Well, they wanted pages and pages and pages of stuff on everyone on the board of directors, which was like, you know, where we went to elementary school and who we used to hang out with. And
did
we know how to build a tree
Every
fort?
Every email you ever sent.
Yeah. Do you know how to build a tree fort? If so, what materials did you use? It was crazy.
Pretty nuts.
Yeah. So it was nice that we didn't all fall for that.
Yeah, we didn't.
Because now more is coming out. And I'm sure it was just the low-level guys.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The guys at the top had nothing to do with it.
No, I'm sure it was one person in the background.
And if it was just the low-level guys, then they're not running their business very well.
Yeah, exactly.
So either way, they lose.
They're fired.
Hey, so interesting thing. We all know that some of the big banks have been refusing to loan business loans to businesses handling firearms, ammunition, that type of thing, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, do you guys know what the square is? If you go to any kind of a show, for instance, at the convention center, a gun show, an arts and crafts show, any kind of a show where vendors come in, the thing that they do now to take credit card payments from customers
is
they have a little square that they put on their iPhone, and they swipe your credit card, and everything is done electronically on their phone, and they immediately email you your credit card receipt. It's pretty cool. I've, as a customer, have done that a couple of times. Well, just came out in the news that Square is no longer taking any payments having to do with anything where self-defense is involved. Guns, ammo, stun guns, pepper spray, anything where any harm could be done to anyone, Square is no longer taking any payments.
Wow, they better not sell any kitchen knives.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, because there's so many things I could say.
and here's another one for you.
Okay.
You're going to love this. So we all remember the 1% lumber tax, right?
Oh, yes. In California, this is just in California, and they passed a 1% tax on lumber.
So that's consumer products. When you go to Home Depot, you pay an extra 1% sales tax on lumber products, and that was supposed to help, you know, fill up the coffers of some of these agencies like CDF, and so they could do what they do with timber harvest plants, okay? And that the big thing there was that 1% sales tax was supposed to be involved in primarily going toward managing timber harvest plans, that type of thing, right?
It was supposed to lower the cost, and the way they pitched it to the timber companies was it was going to help mitigate some of the liability if fire started on their land, or if, like, fire started in the forest and burned over to their land. Then they wouldn't get billed.
And, of course, this is on the back of the taxpayers.
Right, right.
Not on the back of the timber companies, but the taxpayers.
Yeah, or the agencies that mismanage their forest and let them burst into flames.
You, the consumer, running to Home Depot on Sunday morning to get a 2x4 is paying for that. So there's now bills that have been, there are now bills that have been introduced to the California State Legislature. We got an email within the last couple of days that they are now attempting to put something, I believe, on the ballot in November of 2014. There are going to be petitions that are being circulated for signatures, and it's all going to depend on how they spin it. But now what they want to do is, if you are a private landowner, let's say you've got 40 acres and, mm-hmm. and you want to keep it fire safe and you want to do a selective harvesting of your timber to keep your property safe, as with your neighbors.
Sure.
Then in addition to everything else that you pay, you are going to pay 8% off the top of your profits. And if you are SPI or any one of the lumber mills that buys a Forest Service sale, because this Forest Service occasionally will sell off some of its land, and you can then go in and harvest that for safety purposes, 33% off the top of your profit.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, isn't that nice?
Well, okay, so just in case people are having trouble connecting the dots, I met a lady yesterday who is going to be on the program. I'm kind of hoping first part of June, but we haven't exactly nailed down a date. And she'll let us know what this all means, because her name is Kitty Worthman. And you might have seen her on Glenn Beck. She's mm-hmm. been on Fox a bunch of times. She lives in South Dakota. And let's see, foremost lobbyist on conservative and pro-family issues for the state of South Dakota. She was really instrumental in getting John Thune in there.
Oh.
And getting rid of Tom Daschle. She was telling us the story yesterday. This lady's 88 years old. She was absolutely a kick in the pants. Yeah. I have actual photos, well, of her photos, but we took pictures so we could put them on the website for people when that show comes up. She used to dress in disguise.
No way.
And I am not kidding you. They were good. I mean, like cotton blobs up in your, you know, like at the dentist.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. She goes, oh, honey, it'll distort your nose even. No one will know who you are. And I'm like, didn't they, like, recognize your accent? She is a hoot.
Oh, nice.
Seriously. And just, like, still, yeah. She's still right in the middle of it. She was 12 when Austria chose to become part of the Nazi system, and Hitler became the Führer. She witnessed firsthand what happened to the country when it's taken over by socialism and its freedoms are lost. She's lived in the United States since 1950, been a citizen since mm-hmm. 1962. She came here and washed dishes.
And who knows better about what's happening in this country than someone who has already lived through it somewhere else?
Oh, and
if you don't listen to people like that, you're a fool.
The thing that was super interesting about her story yesterday is that, you know, we can all make comparisons and all that. I mean, it's not that complicated, you know, about what happens when they nationalize the banks and mm-hmm. the car companies and blah, blah, blah. But she was living there when they came in and took over the schools.
Mm. Oh.
And how that whole Hitler Youth movement, how they separated the kids from their families.
Mm-hmm.
See, her parents sent her to a boarding school.
Oh.
And she was mad at them.
Sure.
At the time, she looks back, she's like, oh my gosh, they totally saved me. She saw what happened to her friends and all that, right?
Okay.
They separated her out of mm-hmm. that. But the things that they were taught, all this crap like we've got now with the mm-hmm. co-ed bathroom thing and, you know, mm-hmm. sex changes and all this stuff. She said they did the very same stuff, you know.
So they're just following that rule book.
Well, they told the kids one thing,
yeah.
and they said, and your parents aren't going to get it because they're old fuddy-duddies mm-hmm. and they don't know what they're doing, and same stuff like they're being told now.
Yeah.
So anyway,
interesting.
You are going to like her a lot.
Great.
But you look at that.
Yeah.
33% of the profit. She talked about what happened to business then.
Well, and so this is, you know, not that
same
they haven't
stuff.
Already devastated the timber industry in this area, but that will do it even more so. And here's the kicker. CDF, California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, has at this point been in charge of overseeing timber harvest plans. They will be removed from that process, and a new department will be created to handle timber harvest plans. What do you want to bet that department is going to be comprised of extreme environmentalists?
And they all work for free. I mean,
sure.
What the heck?
Yeah.
I'm sure we're going to reduce the bureaucrat workforce in some other agency.
So that 1% tax, honestly, just opened the door. And my husband sent out an email to some folks yesterday commenting on it. And when he hit the send button, I made him type, see, I told you so.
Go Dan. Well, it's true.
Yeah.
I mean, it's true.
Told you so.
It's true. Doug Malfa voted against that in the Senate, and people were mad at him.
Yeah.
That he wasn't helping the timber industry. How could he not help them? And so, he said, I'm not helping you.
So, yeah,
they'll never be happy.
We're not going to charge you over here for, fires that are supposedly started by you, but we're going to get you over here. We'll get 33% of your profit. We're going to get your money one way or the other.
And bigger than, and I'm sure that won't be passed on to the taxpayer.
No, not at all.
So, you know, you look at the, look at the big picture, you know, cutting down on building, cutting down on the use of wood products, cutting, you know.
Yeah.
The politics of scarcity.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, thought I'd pass that stuff along. Nice. And that's going to be a petition circulated. So when you go to Safeway, read carefully what you're signing.
Yeah, don't sign that.
Hey, so today's guest, after we come back from our break, this is going to be a great show. You know that we've got a lot of extremely talented and knowledgeable people, specifically in the industry of science, who are beginning to step up and speak out. We have a gentleman from UCLA who has been, as he told me, politically incorrect most of his career. He's going to talk about the California Air Resources Board, the history behind it, what it's doing to devastate small business in California, and what's happened to him since he spoke out.
Well,
it's going to be a good show.
I was just looking at the little thing here. He joined UCLA in 1976 as an assistant research professor.
Yeah.
So I was, what, just starting high school? No, yeah. I was in junior high. And so he's investigated the changing face of public health through a variety of research projects, studies, and papers. Mm-hmm. Well, we've watched that experiment, too.
We sure have.
He's going to be an interesting guy. Yeah, I'm really looking forward
really
to
is.
It.
He really is. Dr. James Enstrom, a professor at UCLA, specifically in scientific research, and he's never received tenure. They've been trying and trying and trying to fire him.
He's been there since 1976.
And he's been hanging on by his fingernails because he said, because I've been politically incorrect, I've never quite reached tenure.
Interesting.
It's amazing. But they've been trying to...
They always want to get rid of him.
Yeah,
you know?
And they can't. It's just, it's a fascinating, fascinating story.
Honestly.
And if you go to wethepeopleradio.us, there are a whole bunch of links that he's provided. You really want to look at those and read those. And there's Reason TV has like a 9-minute video that talks about his story and some of the corruption on the CARB board under Mary Nichols. So
you only thought it was bad.
Yeah, and what he told me yesterday when we were speaking, he said, you know, it's kind of interesting. You've been emailing me at my UCLA email address, and he goes, it's going to be really funny to see if that comes back and comes back around to me. And if it doesn't, I hope it does. He goes, I know they've been watching. He goes, because if I'm dealing with radicals like you, that would be me. And they come back.
That'd be all of us?
Yeah,
all
that
us
would be
nice
all of us.
People?
He says, then I know that they're spying on
me. So everybody out there, I want you to all collectively say hi to the UCLA spies. Hi, UCLA
good
spies.
Good morning.
Happy Mother's Day. I was thinking the same thing, obviously. Oh, my gosh. And if you missed the program last week on Prairie Dogs, you're just not living right.
Yeah.
Did you go back and listen to it?
I didn't.
I do not go back and listen to all our shows, obviously, because I don't have that much time.
Yeah.
However, I was sitting there doing something late at night, and I was listening to that again. Nice job, Bob.
It's a mind blower.
Nice job. So are you
that
giving
was
us
one of our better efforts, wasn't
it? That was one of our better efforts. Are you giving us the high sign? We need to take a little break here?
We do. I have a call on the line that has nothing to do with our guest, but I need to discuss it with you off the air.
Okay, thank you.
Well, we're going to talk about whoever it is that's on the phone that we haven't met yet. Apparently, we'll need 2 minutes to do that and thank our advertisers at the same time. You're listening to KCNR, 1460 AM, community radio for the North State.
Since you were 17, in all the time I've known you, I still don't know what you mean. The weekend at the college didn't turn out like you planned. The things that pass for knowledge I can't understand.
Are you reeling in the years, stowing away the time?
And we're back. Thanks for joining We the People Radio with your ghost hosts, Aaron Ryan, Elizabeth Woodward, and Bob Martin. And we've kind of covered the news and reviews for the week, so we're going to jump right to our guest, Dr. James Enstrom, PhD, UCLA professor. He deals with scientific research, and he was formerly a research professor for the University of California School of Public Health for close to four decades. Dr. Enstrom has explored many of today's most pressing medical issues. Since he joined UCLA in 1976 as an assistant research professor in the area of scientific education, Dr. Enstrom has investigated the changing face of public health through a variety of research projects, studies, and papers. Currently, his research centers on, and I'm going to, epidemiological patterns associated with cancer and similar conditions, largely focusing on demographics in California. And I kind of stumbled upon Dr. Enstrom through another conference that I was listening to, another conference call, and was really fascinated with the topic because he was discussing the California Air Resources Board, and we're talking about fake science yet again.
Shocking.
Yeah, and if you've listened to the show at all and you scroll down on some of the previous shows that we've done, you will see that we've covered a lot of issues. But I'm going to cut straight to Dr. Enstrom. Good morning, Jim.
Hi.
Hey, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for inviting me. This is a great opportunity.
So you and I talked quite a bit over the week about what we're going to cover, and we thought that we would cover the history of the California Air Resources Board, then kind of cut over to how this is dramatically impacting small businesses, and then before we wrap up our 2 hours, we'll talk about what's happened to you in the process. So take it away.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much for this very good opportunity. And basically, I'd like to focus on four areas. First is regarding the explanation of the science behind the CARB diesel regulations and the what is known as the fine particulate matter epidemiology that underlies much of this. And it relates to two talks that I gave in 2009 and 2012. Then I'd like to discuss the progress that I'm making in the lawsuit that I've filed against UCLA in an attempt to restore my faculty position. And then third, I'd like to discuss a couple of recent actions, especially up in Northern California, that are relevant to combating the CARB regulations. And then finally, I'd like to make some suggestions on how members of this audience, especially even starting there in your hometown of Reading, that you can do to have an impact on this.
Great.
And so first I'm going to start with just summarizing a talk that I gave on August 1st of 2009. And these talks and so forth are all compiled on my website for the Scientific Integrity Institute, which I established in 2005 as a resource for a number of the aspects of my epidemiological research. And they're filed under the documents in chronological order. So this is what I'm going to do is go through a PowerPoint presentation that I made on August 1st of 2009. And this was made possible because two business organizations in Southern California were gracious enough to believe in me and give me an opportunity to speak to their members. And this was the California Dump Truck Owners Association and the Southern California Contractors Association. And both of these organizations are heavily involved with diesel equipment and were directly impacted by the diesel regulations. And so basically I gave a talk that was entitled "None of This is Real." And the reason, and the subtitle is "Misuse of Diesel Science by the California Air Resources Board." And I emphasize the first three words of diesel, which are D-I-E. they'll die. And this has been the way that it's been sold. Diesel kills people. And what I try to do here is bring about the tremendous amount of distortion and the suppression of dissent. And I'd like to, and I think this is very important to understand that I was not supposed to emerge as a spokesman on this because the there's a tight control over the faculty and the media in California, and dissenters like myself were never supposed to get as visible as I have gotten. And so I started this talk in 2009 with a discussion about the difference between good and bad science. And a lot of what I've been able to do is because of good science, which is something we all strive to maintain. And in particular, one development that's occurred during the last 20 years, and everyone's familiar with it, is the Internet. And it's been called the greatest advance in communication since the printing press. And I made the point that this development is due to several Nobel Prizes and discoveries, and then they were awarded Nobel Prizes in physics. And starting back in 1906, the discovery of the electron, which led to the revolution we've had in electronics in the past century. And it's because of the Internet that I was able to communicate in ways which I never could have if the Internet didn't exist. And in particular, I began communicating at the beginning of 2006 with a physician and lawyer in Texas named John Dunn. Very wonderful man who's doesn't have a direct stake in any of this. He was doing this just out of his concern also for honest science. And we have maintained and grown the effort. In fact, it's grown all over the country and trying to understand what EPA and other regulatory agencies like CARB have done to science, which is really misused it very badly. And also, I like to go through historical examples of misuse of science, and probably the best one is involving two Russian plant geneticists, and it occurred mainly during the 1930s and 40s, and it involved an honest scientist, a world-renowned plant geneticist named Nikolai Ivanovich Vavilov, and then the corrupt pseudoscientist named Trofim Denisovich Lysenko.
Wow, and you spit that right
happened,
out.
If this may be a little, you need to look. You can look these things up by simply Googling Vavilov, V-A-V-I-L-O-V, and Lysenko is L-Y-S-E-N-K-O. And it's important because what Lysenko did is controlled in an unethical way the science on plant genetics during a period when in America plant genetics was being used to increase crop yields and make agriculture in the United States the greatest in the world. And that's why in many places in the United States they've taken acreage out of production because we produce so much grains and other agricultural products that it's not necessary to use everything that we could use. But in the situation was reversed in the Soviet Union, and they needed improvements in agriculture. But because Lysenko was able to work closely with the leader of the Soviet Union in the 30s and 40s, and everyone knows who that is, Joseph Stalin, he got people that disagreed with his incorrect use of genetics to be silenced. And these scientists, like Vavilov, were actually either killed or sent to prison. And this is sort of over the top, but people have to understand, because I made this comparison of Vavilov with Mary Nichols. And the reason I did that is because there's a lot of similarities. Let me just summarize the what Lysenko did. He made false crop claims and relied on an erroneous type of plant genetics. And he was able to purge the dissenting scientists like Vavilov. As a result, there were famines in the Soviet Union, and many Soviet citizens starved. And the end result is that Soviet agriculture has never recovered. It's never going to be the same as American agriculture. And this is one of the real tragedies of this situation. And regarding the analogy with Mary Nichols, she is an activist lawyer. She has no training as a scientist. She gets her power by being backed by major politicians in the state of California.
And Mary Nichols heads up the California Air Resources Board, correct?
Yes, okay. Exactly. And as she was headed this board back in the late 70s and early 80s when Jerry Brown was the governor the first time, and he's kept her on currently. And she has a tremendous amount of power, and what she does with this regarding the diesel is they consistently exaggerate diesel health effects. They approve and implement diesel regulations that are only being used in California. What happens to dissenting scientists like myself? We basically get either ignored, we can't get proper funding, and the end result is that the people that use diesel equipment, truckers, contractors, agricultural industries, timber industries, are all hurt. And this is not the way science should be done, and regulatory policy should be implemented. Now, what I did as part of the effort to understand this, I dug back into the history of how it was possible to get these diesel regulations implemented. And it started in 1983 with the passage of an Assembly Bill 1807. And it was a lady named Sally Tanner, who was actually an assemblywoman down in Southern California, and she worked closely with two other prominent legislators, Gray Davis, who went on to become governor, and Tom Hayden, who was at the time married to Jane Fonda and was an activist. And they passed this bill to made it possible to declare substances as toxic. And what I uncovered is the actual bill states that members of this nine-member panel called the Scientific Review Panel on Toxic Air Contaminants were supposed to be appointed for three-year terms. And they were nominated by the president of the University of California. But what has happened is that these terms have not been followed properly, and it relates to another Proposition 140 that was passed by the legislature in 1990 to implement legislative term limits, and this was done to basically end the reign of Willie Brown, who was probably been the most powerful Speaker of the Assembly in the history of California. And what happened is that with the term limits in the legislature, the term limits were never really implemented on this scientific review panel. In fact, the head of this panel, since 1998 is a professor here, had been a professor at UCLA for the last 30 years, named John Freund. And John Freund is a close colleague of Tom Hayden. They were both. They both became famous as members of the Chicago Seven, who disrupted the 1968 Democratic Convention in Chicago. And they both know how to use political activism to the maximum, and that's what they've done. So John Freund, who's been on this panel ever since it started, now 30 years ago, has been able to declare so many different substances as toxic in California, which are not toxic anywhere else in the world, at least the way they're defined here in California, that it's really led to an ability to change industries, entire industries, in a way that's not never was intended by this original legislation, as far as I can tell, because there should have been rotation of panel members, and someone like John Freund should not have been able to serve 10 consecutive three-year terms.
And, you know, we know that there are always unintended consequences to government interference. I mean, that's just it.
And government interference is always the key. Hey, Dr. Enstrom, we need to take a really quick break here.
That's
fine. And because we're kind of behind, so we're gonna have to take a lot of really quick breaks here before the first of the hour.
That's fine.
We will come back and learn more about the evil, I was going to say the evil triangle, but it's got more sides than that. You're listening to We the People Radio here at KCNR 1460 AM, community radio for the North State.
Time is really wasted. There's no guarantee.
We're talking to Dr. James Enstrom from UCLA, a professor of science with an emphasis in epidemiology. And, yeah, real science.
Real science, not like our science.
And we're talking about the faux science and the fraud of the California Air Resources Board. I don't mince words. I'm sure you can tell. Anyway, so Dr. Enstrom, let's talk a little bit about the impact that you have heard about on small businesses. You had mentioned to me that you've made some acquaintances of folks that have actually been devastated by this. And again, I encourage you to go to WeThePeopleRadio.us. Check out the links under the bio for our guest today, because there are links there that will lead you to these stories. And there is a 9-minute video on Reason TV that's really very concise and sums up the whole issue. So, Dr. Enstrom?
Yes. If it's all right, I would like to try to finish the history of this.
Absolutely.
I know this is a lot to digest in one session. But
that's okay.
I think
we have archives.
People want to understand the history of this in order to appreciate what's happening currently, and then we'll get to the issues of the current impacts. But basically, a key decision was made in 1998 by this scientific review panel on toxic air contaminants, which has activist members appointed to it, in particular this chairman, John Freund. And this is a quote from the hearing they had in April of 1998, and it's John Freund speaking. I'm calling the meeting to order. The tension level in this room is much too low. We expected about 500 truckers here. That didn't materialize, and now everyone is so relaxed. The point of this is I don't believe this meeting was announced properly, and so truckers didn't actually know where to go to protest. But his point, and he knew this very well, is that if truckers were aware of what was going on at this point, they probably would have spoken out. And then at that same meeting, they went on to adopt what was called a unit risk factor relating diesel exhaust to lung cancer. And this at the time was the primary reason why they needed to you know, establish the toxicity of diesel. But during the discussion of this unit risk factor, John Freund actually admitted, he didn't really mean to say this, but he had actually, it's in the transcript, he made the statement, none of this is real. In other words, their assignment of this unit risk factor was not really based on solid evidence, because the primary study they were relying on by a professor from Harvard named Garshick. Garshick didn't even want his study used for this purpose. And the person that could have spoken up the most on this was the epidemiologist that was on the panel. Freund is a toxicologist. There's an epidemiologist named Gary Friedman, who I've actually known for almost 40 years, the entire time that I've been involved as an epidemiologist. He sat on the panel without a legal appointment in 1998. His appointment actually expired in 94, but the appointment process was so sloppy that no one even noticed it. And he almost said nothing. He's the one that should have talked about the weaknesses in these epidemiologic studies. Mainly they were dealing with studies on railroad workers and truckers who were exposed to diesel exhaust, but they didn't actually measure the direct exposure. They just made the assumption, since they were around diesel engines and diesel exhaust, that their level of exposure would be very high. But there were confounding factors, like many of these workers smoked, and that would have affected their lung cancer rates more than the diesel exhaust. So none of this was really properly vetted in that 98 meeting, and yet they went ahead and made this identification of diesel as a toxic air contaminant. And there was an immediate negative reaction. In fact, California Trucking Association and other major industries opposed this, and it was also opposed by 66 legislators. They signed a letter in 98 opposing this. That's more than half the legislators. They knew what was coming down the road in terms of potential regulatory policy, and that led to immediate lawsuits starting in 1999. There was a particularly prominent lawsuit based out of Fresno with a trucking company. Apodaca was the lead plaintiff, and this was an attempt to overturn the bad science by this scientific review panel. In any case, this didn't work out well because the legal system doesn't handle science very well. The judges aren't trained to make evaluations and scientific evidence, and they generally look to the process. And they check to see if there were, you know, if CARB had followed the process properly. And in the minds of the judge in Fresno, they had. And he didn't know about these irregularities in the appointment process. This is just something that I uncovered primarily during the last 5 years or so. And so the laws that CARB has passed have remained in place, even though they've been challenged now on a number of different fronts. And what I think is important to note is that the evidence during this time has actually shifted dramatically in the direction of no relationship of diesel particulate matter to mortality or to lung cancer, particularly in the state of California. Now, I became very involved 5 years ago. I testified on June 4th of 2008 at the Senate Rules Committee confirmation hearing for Mary Nichols. And I was the only scientist in the room. There were about a dozen activists representing the different environmental organizations in California that were strongly in support of her. But I raised objections that were related to the fact that I believed the science was misrepresented, because I published a very large peer-reviewed paper that showed no relationship between fine particulate air pollution and total mortality in California. And this represented the largest and most detailed study that had been published at the time, and it's still the largest published study, although there's a couple other unpublished studies which back me up that that provide even more detail supporting my study.
Good grief.
But in any case...
Dr. Enstrom, hang first for just a couple minutes. We've got to squeeze in one break before the top of the hour. And next hour we'll do a better job so we don't have this little train wreck we've got going on. We'll be right back with Dr. Enstrom here. We're talking about the California Air Resources Board and their phony science. You're here at KCNR, 1460 AM. We the People Radio, we're talking to Dr. James Enstrom. Hey, so Dr. Enstrom, before we take our five-minute break at the top of the hour, one of the things that I thought was very telling about the California Air Resources Board and how they handle their faux scientists, there was a gentleman, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe he was right underneath Mary Nichols, who misrepresented his education. Rather than actually receiving his PhD from an accredited university, he bought the diploma online for $1,000. And when they found out, they demoted him and took away 2 months' salary, but he still works there?
Yes. this gets to the actual report that came out in 2008 that I criticized, dealing with fine particulate air pollution and premature deaths. And the gentleman's name is Ian T. Tran, and he's been working at CARB for, I believe, about 20 years. And when my criticism of his report was not properly addressed, and this went on during 2008, it's quite a lot of, in fact, I spoke on a teleconference with him and three other prominent epidemiologists in July of 2008. And instead of addressing my criticism, they basically continued to push this notion that their selective use of the evidence was correct, and they just were going to ignore critics like myself. And then there's a whole series of other critics that have been ignored. But I was really the only one aggressively pursuing this. So what happened is the latter part of 2008 came. There was an uncovering because I checked. There are different sources of dissertation listings. The most famous one is called Dissertation Abstracts, which is now online. And you can verify every legitimate PhD in the United States. And we just started checking the authors of this report because of their unprofessional behavior and the way they didn't change the draft. The draft came out in May, and the final version came out in October of 2008, and there were essentially no changes that incorporated the criticism by a dozen prominent people, including myself. And it turned out that Tran didn't have the PhD that was claimed in a letter that was describing the qualifications of the authors of this report. And so this is where I, along with three other scientists, all professors here in California, approached the board, including the mayor of Riverside is where we started. He was the closest geographically. And we also went to a professor at UC San Francisco named Balmes. And these people basically didn't act on this information, that there were questions about Tran's PhD. And the regulations on the diesel, primary regulations, were passed in December of 2008. But because of publicity that I got, again, I had to seek out journalists that were willing to note this, and there was a editorial writer for the San Diego Union-Tribune, Chris Reed, who wrote a series of editorials about this starting in December of 2008, and this then led to an investigation of Tran's actual credentials, and this is where it was determined that rather than having a PhD in statistics from UC Davis, as he claimed, he actually had a mail-order PhD from Thornhill University, which at the time was based at a UPS store in Manhattan.
Unbelievable.
This is how we got some traction on this, not because of the major flaws in the science, but because of simple fraud that everyone can understand.
And something that might embarrass everyone if anyone found out.
Gee willikers, and it's ruining everyone's life, so would be a shame if people actually found out. Hey, we're going to come back with more with Dr. Enstrom here. Our second hour is with him. And if you have questions, please call at the very beginning, not the very end.
You've got 5 minutes. Fill up the coffee cup.
The number's 530-605-4567. We're here at KCNR 1460 AM.
All right, stick around. Hour number two of Dr. James Enstrom, next on We the People here at KCNR, Shasta Redding.
Welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio. Happy Mother's Day to women everywhere. You are joining your hosts, Aaron Ryan, Elizabeth Woodward, and Bob Martin. We are chatting and streaming live at wethepeopleradio.us. If you go to that webpage, everything about today's guests is right there for you, and there are a ton of links to follow that you can kind of peruse later after you've listened to the show. And also, if you scroll the right side of that webpage, you will see subject matter of every show that we've ever had. Each show is an individual link that you can email out far and wide. And as you know, we are an educational program providing information that you will not get in the mainstream news. So today we're talking with Dr. James Enstrom. He is a research scientist, scientific scientist, primarily in epidemiology at UCLA, and we're talking about fake science, and we're talking about whistleblowers.
He talks about real science, though. He's a real scientist.
Yeah, he is a real scientist. We're talking about fake science from the California Air Resources Board, and if you don't know how serious that is, the California Air Resources Board, otherwise known as CARB, is primarily responsible for massive regulations that are shutting down small business in California. And we were talking about an individual that's on the CARB board under Mary Nichols, who had a fake diploma, misrepresented his education, but is one of the lead scientists determining the science behind the regulations. And if that doesn't scare you, I don't know what will. Now,
well, how did that not become a deal breaker? Since you were involved in it, Dr. Enstrom, I mean, how did that not just blow up in their face?
Well, basically what happened is, and I believe this came from the top, named Mary Nichols, that they were not going to address any of the criticism that I and other very prominent scientists has raised. They were going to just basically circle the wagons, and they're going to keep Dr. Tran, I call him Dr. Tran, because he actually does have a PhD, paper PhD, but just keep him within CARB so that he couldn't talk and continue paying him, and just basically try to ignore me and marginalize me, and so I kept fighting back and kept producing even more and more evidence. In fact, studies, numerous studies, especially since 2008, have come out supporting my findings, which were at the time when they were published in 2005 considered very anomalous and out of agreement with certainly the evidence that EPA and CARB were using. But basically, I kept pressing this. I was able to enlist the support of several of the prominent businessmen and organizations in California that made possible my talk in 2009, the one I'm trying to summarize now. In particular, there was a contractor from Sacramento who I became very close with because we're both California natives, the same age, and both very outspoken and believe in integrity. And his name is Norman R. Brown. And he goes by the name Skip Brown. And he began with my assistants trying to write a number of letters to what he's written to CARB and to UCLA regarding what he thought was wrong. I believe then what happened is that that UCLA just became much more aware of my involvement in this matter, and then at the end of 2009, suddenly I was going to be reviewed for my, you know, capabilities as a scientist for a position that I'd held since 1976. And I had a very important meeting with my department chair in February of 2010, and it turns out that my department chair, named Richard Jackson, was part of the what is now the Cal EPA back in 1990 when diesel was declared as a carcinogen under Proposition 65, mm-hmm. which was passed in 1986. And that's led to a number of substances being declared carcinogens in California that are not considered carcinogenic anywhere else in the world in many cases. And so my department chair basically decided that he'd had enough of me and my outspokenness. And so this led then to the efforts starting in early February of 2010 to get me out of UCLA. And basically I've used the appeals process internally that has made it possible for me to show that the actions that have been taken against me are wrong. And it also shows the wrong-headedness of the way this has been done. Instead of trying to engage in a dialogue where they could understand my interpretation of the science as opposed to the CARB interpretation, they basically decided that I had to be shut down and removed. And by using these appeals processes internally, I was able to gather more and more attention to my situation. And this wouldn't have happened really without publicity that I got from a lady in Bakersfield, a very prominent columnist for the Bakersfield Californian. And she began writing about CARB and studies that I'd done in January of 2009. But she publicized my termination situation at UCLA in 2010. This led to national exposure on this issue, and an organization in Philadelphia took up my case. It's called the Foundation for Individual Rights and Education, and they began also approaching UCLA because they could see it as a clear violation of my First Amendment rights. In other words, that I had the right to make statements and not be retaliated against.
And I do want to just interject very quickly that links to all of this information, a lot of the documents, can be found on wethepeopleradio.us. So as Dr. Enstrom discusses these different issues, these different organizations, some of the you know, the articles written by some of the journalists.
Video of the meeting, too.
Yeah, that video of them. It's all on wethepeopleradio.us.
Dr. Enstrom, I'm just picturing, you know, you're here is, you know, this obviously has evolved over a period of time. So as you're coming out with the science, you have other science people that you've been working with, you know, in various capacities. Do they just pretend like they can't see you anymore? I mean, how does that work? Do they say, oh, I'd like to help you, but I'm chicken? How does that happen? I mean, you have a professional relationship with these folks at UCLA for 20 years, and then all of a sudden, well, you might not be, you know, all that.
Well, it has been very disappointing with regard to the people that have known me dating back. There's another prominent, in fact, the most prominent was this epidemiologist at UCLA, the one that wrote the letter that made it possible for me to come to UCLA. Has basically just ignored my pleas and has I guess a different agenda. You know, there's certain approaches to science that are different in mine, and I believe in California there are many there's too many activist scientists. They're not supposed to. You're not supposed to be doing activism in science. You're supposed to be
science
doing
should
truth.
Be science.
Well, yeah, because one of them is indisputable and one isn't.
Well, it's kind of, you know, it's funny. It occurs to me, for those of us who are not scientists, like, say, me, for instance, you know, I have to kind of put this in a place that I can relate. It'd be like going to activist doctors.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. I'm going to treat your medical problem based on my personal philosophy.
Yeah, based on how I feel. Very, very messed up.
And I'd like to say that we have got Skip Brown on the phone right now from Sacramento. Good morning, Skip.
No, we don't.
He will be with us shortly.
We lied. We're flipping switches, man. You should see it.
Okay, he's
here.
On now.
Hi, good morning, Skip.
It's like NASCAR.
Good morning.
Great, and you have a close relationship with Dr. Enstrom. Tell us how this this has impacted you, the CARB regulations.
It has destroyed my business of my family business of 70 years. They have made everything that I own illegal to use or sell in the state of California in the very near future.
What is your business?
As they have with every other person who owns diesel engines
or
portable engines in the state of California.
Mm-hmm. So
and they have done this on science that is not only refutable, it's ridiculous.
So what?
It shouldn't even be called science.
So prior to these regulations, your business, are you in the trucking business?
Or trucking and heavy construction.
Okay, and what kind of financial devastation has this caused? Give us a dollar amount of what this has done to you.
Well, in order to replace my assets, I'm a small contractor in the Sacramento Valley area. It would take between $2 and $3 million to replace all my assets, and they have there's basically a mandate in the near future, starting with the trucking right now. And then there is not the economy to afford replacement at this time, and at the speed that they want it to be replaced, it's impossible in any kind of economy. I've been a contractor for over 45 years in this family business, and basically what we do is we will be slowly liquidating our assets until we close the doors. And with every asset we liquidate, out goes another person employed.
And how many employees do you currently have?
We're down to about 20.
Okay, and how many did you have prior to the implementation of these regulations?
Well, we just started the liquidation, so we're basically at the same level that we have been.
Okay.
You know, we're at about 25.
Okay.
But, the economy cut down a number also. But during the slow economic times, that's when you build your asset base by picking up, you know, good deals on the marketplace. But because of the elimination of all the older diesel equipment, like anything older than 5 years old, they have destroyed the used market for equipment. And the used market for equipment was what starts small businesses.
Sure. They can't afford to buy new.
And so, you know, you can't afford to go out and pay $250,000 a truck for every truck that you want to get started with. So you buy used trucks that have a fair number of miles on it. And you build your business in that manner, and then eventually you start buying some newer stuff. But by destroying the market for diesel equipment, they have destroyed the industry that it supports, which is every industry in California. The agricultural industry will be hit next. Right now it's the trucking industry, to be followed by the construction industry. There's even regulations written in specifications right now, even before the construction industry regulations are implemented, because of the threat of implementation that we're trying to stop.
Sure.
And it's been through the efforts of one particular individual, backed by a second one, the first one being Dr. James Enstrom, who you're talking with, the second one being Dr. John Dunn, that have introduced to this industry the facts of the matter, in which a number of us have taken up in trying to stop this. But the Air Resources Board, as Dr. Enstrom has put it, they have just put everybody on ignore.
You know,
I have spoken in front of every board meeting that has been over the last 5 years, and they'll say, thank you very much, Mr. Brown. We feel your pain. Your 3 minutes are up. Next.
Yeah, you got to love that. Everybody loves it when their entire livelihood is hanging on a three-minute comment. Hey, Mr. Brown, hang on for us for 2 minutes here. We need to take a quick break. Thank our advertisers. We will be back. We're talking about stuff affecting your lives through the California Air Resources Board here on We the People Radio at KCNR 1460 AM, community radio for the North State. Dr. Enstrom's theme song.
There you go.
The more you ignore me, the closer I get.
And we've got Mr. Skip Brown on the phone from Sacramento, who is in the trucking and construction industry. And for everyone listening that thinks, well, you know, I'm not in the construction business, so I don't care. And I'm not in the agricultural business, so I don't care. And I'm not in the trucking business, so I don't care. Well, let's see. Construction industry, if you manufacture cabinets or sell paint, you should care. So you have to look at any industry and all of the dozens upon dozens of ancillary businesses that are offshoots of any one of those big industries, and you will be impacted. And as a consumer, Once you eliminate all the small business people from the market, you just have the big guys. They've got the monopoly, and they can charge whatever they want. You get rid of competition, prices go up, and it all gets distributed down to the consumer, so anybody listening should care. And that brings me to a point. Do you see, either one of you, do you see any evidence of any cronyism, capitalist cronyism going on with some of the larger business owners in your industries? Are they in compliance, or not in compliance, but in cahoots with the CARB board to get these regulations passed so that they can eliminate the small guy as their competition? Anybody there?
Yes. This is Jim again.
So, Jim, what do you think?
Basically, what I believe is that this this is being used as a means of controlling society in California. It doesn't really have anything to do with health impacts, not at the level that air pollution exists now in California. People don't realize how healthy California is. It's one of the healthiest states in the United States. And the levels of pollution have been brought down to ranges which are quite consistent with very good health. And further reductions are just basically a means of controlling the economy and driving small businessmen like Skip Brown out of business. And I think this is something that people have to realize in a greater extent, that an agency like CARB has the ability to control the lives, particularly of small businessmen, in ways I don't think were ever intended by the law. You have to realize that CARB started in 1967, U.S. EPA started in 1970, America functioned for almost two centuries without these agencies. Somehow they've managed to elevate air pollution to a status which it doesn't deserve. There are many, many factors that affect human health, and one of which Skip Brown is very well, is unemployment and other small businessmen. And that is not given proper consideration by CARB and EPA and the regulatory regimes that have been set up around the efforts to control air pollution.
Well, there's a ton of research that shows that stress is a super powerful factor.
Exactly. And so this is where you have to look at this. You know, this becomes a somewhat cynical view, but you have to realize when they're so obstinate that they won't actually re-examine the basis on which they're making these regulations, that you must believe that they have all ulterior motives in mind, and I believe they do. And they are to affect the nature of who's in California, because once you can't stay in business in California, then many people have been forced to leave. There's been tremendous loss of manufacturing in California that's now done in other states or other countries like Mexico and China, who don't comply. China certainly doesn't comply with the air pollution regulations that California tries to is complying with. And so it's a broader picture of control of society that I think would be something that of great interest to your audience, because this is not what should be happening in California, and I think it can be resisted by dealing with these agencies. And you don't start with the strongest agency; you start with the smaller and more responsive agencies. And that's where I would like to mention a couple of events. At the end of March, there was a hearing organized by Assemblyman Dan Logue at the Chico City Hall. And this brought out a tremendous number of small businessmen to talk to the CARB officials who were there to present their diesel regulations. And it was supposedly the largest meeting that had ever filled that city hall. And and has now highlighted in the minds of many of these businessmen the need to get active on this subject. And there's also now litigation that's been filed by the Pacific Legal Foundation, which is based in Sacramento.
Oh, good. And, oh, we love them.
Yes, and this, I think, is reframing a lot of these regulations in the form of an illegal tax. And I think that's a good way to look at it. It's the cost, you translate the cost of, like, replacing the diesel engines or the diesel equipment, and on equipment that you bought legally without this requirement, it's actually winding up being a tax on your business. And it's not done through the normal process. And so in many ways, it's in my mind, illegal. And I think that many of the businessmen would agree with me, certainly Skip. And this is being highlighted, I think, by the forums such as the one in Chico. And there's something that has also occurred, and this involves the smaller air pollution agencies. They're called air pollution control districts, and there's 35 of them throughout California. And I looked up in their latest report, which came out in April of this year. You have your own, the Shasta County Air Pollution Control District. And what I'm suggesting is that you approach this agency with a letter that came out of another air pollution control district based further south. It's called the Great Basin Unified Air Pollution Control District. That's three tiny counties, Inyo, Mono, and Alpine counties, right in the Sierras. They wrote a letter in July of last year to CARB, and I'm going to read a paragraph from this letter. This is the air pollution control officer from this district. It says, quote, "Because of the district's rural character and lack of significant diesel emissions air pollution, the governing board is concerned about the impacts of the truck and bus regulation on the financial viability of our small businesses and government agencies. The poor financial conditions, which have hit our tourist-based economies especially hard, will make it difficult or impossible for many of our district businesses and all government agencies to comply with the regulation. This would mean the closing of important local businesses and the loss of important government services." And what you could do, I'm saying, is you could take this very letter to your board, which is based there in Reading, and ask for the same consideration. Now, I believe that CARB just simply dismissed this letter. I don't know. I haven't been able to get a follow-up on what happened to this request. But you could do this for your Shasta County Air Pollution Control Board, and you could also do it for the others. It turns out in the northern part of the state, each county has one of these boards. Siskiyou, Modoc, Larson, Tehama, so forth. And you could sort of use the divide-and-conquer strategy. You
now, Dr. Enstrom, is that letter one of the links that you sent?
It may not be, but
okay.
It's dated July 5th of 2012,
mm-hmm.
And it's on my Scientific Integrity Institute document.
Okay, great.
And I can certainly get it to you. But this is an example where you work with your local air board, and then they have always been basically enforcers or in total agreement with CARB. But you try to divide and conquer here. And I think, and you look in this report that came out, there are no violations of EPA standards in Shasta County currently. So there's no need for these diesel regulations in Shasta County. So you make the argument that Shasta County deserves a waiver or just a complete removal from this regulation. And that, of course, CARB's not going to go along with that because they don't want to see this happening, because that's going to undermine their ability to enforce these regulations on people like Skip Brown. So this is where you could have a tremendous impact in your counties there in the northern part of the state, just if you can get enough members of your audience here to actually do this. I mean, it could really have a big impact.
Outstanding. All right, we're going to take a really quick break. We're going to come back. I think we'll highlight, did we determine that link is on our page? Miss Elizabeth?
That particular link to the letter is not on the page, but it is on his scientific integrity website.
All right, we're going to cut that link, put it on our page, and highlight it in bright yellow. Might not happen for a few minutes. Be patient.
Can we thank Norman for calling in at this point?
Skip, can we thank you for being on and free up that line again? Do you have more to tell us? He's in the cone of silence.
He may have gone away already.
We've hit the radio train wreck, the one where no one talks. All right, we're going to take a really quick break. We'll be right back talking about CARB this morning. What a great way to start your Mother's Day. Nice, Bob. I like this one. All right, we're here at KCNR, 1460 AM, Community Radio for the North State. Be right back.
Short and the nights are long. Where they walk, and I'm on. They twist, and I'll miss. They shin, and I'll shin. They fly, and I'll fly. Well, they're out there having fun in that warm California sun.
Back. Okay, Dr. Enstrom, I know that you're a scientist, but I do hope you appreciated the humor of that song.
Very good.
We try hard to have a little entertainment with our with our dire topics. It's you can't do depressing topics all the time. Hey, we had a call during the break from Alice, who's here in the Reading area, and she had offered at one point during one of the Tea Party meetings, actually, to assemble large numbers of people, and she already has people working on this, to go to the Air Resources Board.
Nice.
So she was willing to put her phone number out there, so if you are kind of new to that cause and don't know Alice, her number is 530, obviously, 410-4890. Okay, so for all you people scrambling for a pen, I'll give you a second here. So she wants to do what you're suggesting, Dr. Enstrom, and really start packing these Air Resources Board. Because, you know, at this point with a California supermajority, we're not taking this down in the legislature.
Mm-mm.
It's going to happen county by county.
Yeah.
That's truly... And hey, think about this. It'll save you gas money, too. You
there
won't have to drive all the way down there.
And give that phone number out one more time, and then I'm going to give a question from the chat room for Dr. Enstrom.
Right on. We've got people everywhere. They're calling. They're texting.
Okay, well, give the phone number out.
That just makes me go slower. What a contrary. All right. Your contact for the Reading area for the California Air Resources Board pushback group is Alice at 410-4890.
Kudos to Alice for stepping up.
Thanks,
and,
Alice.
And for giving her phone number out on the air.
I'm a big fan of that. Right out there in the open.
Nice. Hey, so we had a question on the chat room from Dad in Las Vegas, who wondered why the petroleum industry is not stepping up and fighting back against this. What do you think, Dr. Enstrom?
Well, look, a lot of this was done in the 1990s, and there was a tremendous effort, especially with the lawsuit that was filed in 1999. But because the way I said this process doesn't go through the legal system very well, a lot of these industries have decided that they've got to, you know, do something to just get along, you know, and function. Now, I believe there still is opposition that's being expressed. There's organizations like the American Petroleum Institute and so forth, that based in Washington, D.C., that are still doing this on a national level. But there's a degree of sort of hopelessness here in California, and that, I think, is unfortunate because this still can be fought. And I like to use myself as an example and Skip Brown as examples, where two individuals can have much more impact than you'd think in a state of 38 million people, or now maybe it's down to 37. I think we've lost some population recently. But your area is perfect for this. And so I would be pleased to talk to both Alice and you after this call. And you go to these local air boards, which are controlled mainly by locally elected politicians, and I believe they'd be much more responsive than going to CARB. And then this, in turn, starts to undermine CARB's credibility. If you can actually get some of these local air boards to agree with you, and then they will be, you know, going up against CARB.
Hey, and so, Dr. Enstrom, we've got a caller on the line who I think has a comment or a question for you. Dane Wigginton, are you in there?
I'm here. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you two?
Thanks.
That's pretty good.
We're
you
great.
Can pick out which one of us is which.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Thanks for the program and all the information you're disseminating, Dr. Enstrom. I appreciate that you've come forward and had a question. It seems I've spoken in front of the CARB board as well as the California Energy Commission, and it seems the elephant in the room are the aerosol spraying programs that go completely below the radar, or the CARB turns a blind eye to, and we're seeing enough metal come down to change forest floor pHs in our county alone to a magnitude of 10 to 15 times toward alkaline. Does it not seem to you an incredible contradiction that CARB can turn a blind eye to a source of particulate pollution that's astronomically higher than those that they are trying to scapegoat as particulate polluters?
Well,
I'm regarding geoengineering, the geoengineering climate modification programs that we certainly have more than enough data to confirm are going on now.
I don't believe that CARB is a science-based organization anymore. I think it started out that way when it was headed up by Ari Hagensmith, who was a professor at Caltech back in 45 years ago. And they're pushing agendas. And so I think the point you're raising is just one of many examples of how they're trying to manipulate society in California in a manner that is not legal, at least in my view and the views of a number of people, especially coming from the Pacific Legal Foundation and other organizations that have examined what CARB is doing. So what you're pointing out is just another example, I think, of manipulation on the part of CARB.
Yeah, I was told in a high-level EPA meeting with five high-level EPA representatives in Sacramento that they were mandated to air test for combustion particulates only, and the rest of their samples went straight out the window. So I think that's definitely following an agenda. You can't find what you're not looking for. And hopefully the issue of the aerosol spraying, which appears to be affecting everything in the chain of life top to bottom, hopefully that'll be addressed by others. And I would certainly like to talk to you about that at some point as well.
Fine. You're always welcome to email me at jenstrom@ucla.edu. I keep using my UCLA email address because I still have an affiliation, and I also want to test to see if they're monitoring.
Yeah, and you do like it when we radicals email you at the university, don't you, Dr. Enstrom?
Well, yes, because if the university. And I hear the chuckling. If the University of California, which is supposedly the greatest public university in the United States, would monitor an individual scientist, this would prove that we're actually back in the 1984, and it would just destroy the notion of the... And I think the university's already suffered tremendously in recent years because it's been exposed as being very activist and politicized. And that's not the way the university was set up, and it shouldn't operate that way. But I welcome
I appreciate your
anybody
your work,
in the audience.
Any comment or any input you have about or knowledge you have about those programs, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that. Thank you very much for all your work.
Thanks for your call, Dane.
Thanks, Dane.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, Dane Wigington has also been a guest on our show and has spent no less than
a
decade researching, analyzing, and speaking about geoengineering. Now, Dr. Enstrom, would you allow me off-air to contact Dane and give him a phone number for you?
Absolutely.
Okay, I will do that.
We're just we're like 411.
You
I
know,
feel like I need to put on my Ernestine the Operator.
What,
is this the party to whom you're
That's what
speaking?
This is all about. And I'll make sure you get Alice's phone number, too.
Nice.
Okay, wonderful. And would you, are there others that would like to speak up on the line, or can I resume here?
How about this? Let's take our final break, and then you can roll it right up to the news. How's that?
Debbie is still trying to call in. I think that might be her.
Debbie, just keep trying. We'll just let that phone ring. Okay, we're gonna go to a really, really quick ad break here. Are we doing that, Bob? I'm trying to read Bob's mind. He's over there. He's flying around. He looks like he's playing some kind of video game. He's got his Wii going on over there.
Just doing 17 things at once.
There you go. You're on We the People Radio here at KCNR 1460 AM Community Radio for the North State.
Welcome back to Comedy Central, otherwise known as We the People Radio. We are talking with Dr. James Enstrom, and I want to say thank you very much for joining us this morning. In case we run up against the top of the hour, we've got Debbie on the line, who has been trying to get through for a half an hour because our lines have been jammed with callers. Go ahead, Debbie.
Hi. Well,
good morning.
Hello, Professor. Good morning. It's been a long journey that we've shared since I learned about Professor Enstrom. And I will tell you that the devastation on the residents and the trucking community in California is going to be horrible. I also attended the meeting in Chico. We've got a great group up there in Chico, Butte County, who are just now learning because we have a very short time, about 8 months until the trucks that are 96 through 99 are no longer allowed on the highways of California.
And when does that happen?
That'll be January 2014. The rest of them will be gone in 2015. A very short number have delays for ag, but I can tell you also at that meeting were 5- and 6th-generation farming families who are looking at losing their entire business.
And then ask yourself where you're going to get your food.
Well, ask yourself where you're going to get anything in California. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to. We're going to be like prisoners, you know, where they push your food through a slot.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to bring our stuff to the border of California and drop it on the ground. We're all going to have to go.
And that's already
go
happening.
Over there and get
there
it.
Are transfer stations set up at some of the borders.
Unbelievable.
Where the out-of-state truckers and a huge amount of small independent owner operators are dropping their trailers. And then they send the California compliant trucks to pick this up. I'm already seeing the increase in food, as I'm sure everybody is. I mean, they're doing it very nicely. The packages are just smaller.
Mm-hmm.
But
sure.
You can trace it right back to our transportation.
Well, you know, honestly, people who don't think about where things come from, we're in a society where we're so accustomed to running to the store anytime mm-hmm. we want to and just grabbing something off a shelf. Where do you think it comes from, and how do you think it gets there?
And as a matter of fact, many of these trucks are very clean, and the Air Resources Board is destroying trucks up to the model year 2006. These are very clean trucks. But they're being destroyed. They're actually drilling a hole through the engine and destroying them. And you were absolutely right about the big players. The big players have been given millions and millions of dollars to replace their fleets, which they already did every 3 or 4 years anyway. These are the interstate guys. They do 100,000 miles or more a year. It is the small truckers that are not eligible for any type of funding, and they cannot afford to go out and buy new trucks.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, okay, so I mean, that's a travesty right there, but if you back that up a step, holy crap, we're paying for that.
So you're going to pay for it one way or the other?
Yeah, so the people getting the quote-unquote funding, they're not getting that from some magical source. I mean, that comes directly from the taxpayer for a problem that doesn't exist.
That's correct. And if there was one victim in there, in this whole thing, another huge victim, besides the entire state, has been Professor Enstrom. Mm-hmm. Because I have watched up close how they tried to destroy him. And he's a fine man, and he dared to whistleblow.
Well, you know, he has stood his ground for years now, and if anybody listening doesn't look at this man as a hero, then you need to take a look in the mirror yourself.
Stop listening to our show, please.
And he is a hero.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, Debbie.
Thank you so much for
calling.
Betty,
but you're welcome.
Oh, Betty. Oh, we're blaming that on Bob.
That's okay.
Thank you. Sorry, Betty.
Good work.
It's my grandma's name.
Dr. Enstrom, what would you like to do with your last 5 minutes?
I know, Betty.
Well, basically, I think I would like to encourage everyone in your audience, even people that don't have any connection with the diesel regulations directly, to stand up and fight this. Use the basics of your organization, We the People. Go back to the founding of this country and look what our forefathers did to establish this wonderful country. They stood their ground against King George. They defied the fact that he was an overwhelming power. At the time, he controlled an empire upon which the sun never set. Who would have believed that America could have defeated King George in the late 18th century? And yet, there seems to be just a sort of hopelessness in California that nothing can be done. But I want to encourage everyone to get active, because this state can really be changed if the people, especially in this type of listening audience, will just get involved. And like I'm suggesting, your area of the state is particularly ripe for this, and you can deal with CARB by going to the local air boards in each county and getting them to change their mind by working on the politicians that head the boards of those agencies, and spreading the word that you fight for a good cause because it's the right thing to do, not because it immediately affects you personally. But I believe that there can be a tremendous change here in California, because the facts are just totally distorted. California is one of the healthiest states in the United States. Air pollution levels now are down so low that they're getting close to being at levels you cannot lower unless you basically remove all the population from these areas. And there are agendas going on at agencies like CARB that make no sense, and other than to just control the lives of primarily small independent businessmen in California. And so you must act, and each year that goes by, there's a change in composition in California, and you can see what's happening. A lot of these businessmen that are not able to survive move to the surrounding states where these regulations don't exist. And so this needs to be stopped right now to the extent possible, and I think it can be. Even our governor is realizing, after going to China, that changes need to be made in the California Environmental Quality Act, and in other regulatory regimes, because if we're going to remain competitive. I mean, this is a world economy now, and in order for California to remain competitive, it has to be on a level and fair playing field. You can't impose draconian regulations in California that aren't imposed anywhere else and expect California to still function. And when you can prove that these regulations aren't science-based in the first place, there ought to be a way that you can make this known, especially to your local officials. And you have a great senator in that area, Senator Ted Gaines. He's helped. He's been involved with my case at UCLA, has supported me. You've got Dan Logue, who's one of the absolute leaders in the assembly, and numerous others that I can't name right now.
That's good, because we've only got 30 seconds before the computer cuts us off. I just looked up.
Hey, Dr. Enstrom, thank you so much.
And if you're ever in Northern California, we want to host a gigantic meeting where you speak.
Yeah, we'd love to have you up here.
Okay, guys.
Okay.
Chris Ann Hall tomorrow
night.
Thank
you again tremendously for this
opportunity.
Thank
you, sir.
Hit the Tea Party tomorrow night in Reading, folks. Chris Ann Hall will be there live, 6 p.m. Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Good night, Joe.
Thank you, Dr. Enstrom. This is KCNR Shasta Reading, Don Shulman.